welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am once again Scott Nye.
I remain David Bax, and Tyler Smith remains out of commission, but very much in our hearts and very much a part of my life. I see him somewhat regularly now, not quite as often as I did before his ongoing medical travesty. But yeah, you can follow him at More Lessons on Twitter, on X. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I still, if I go to it on my desktop like browser, I still type in, well, I type in T, you know.
Yeah.
Honest, I type a T and it finishes.
It autofills.
I don't go to x.com, but the iPhone app icon finally changed somewhat recently.
Yeah, the thing keeps throwing me is the like tab icon is now like the X instead of like the blue bird. So when I like have a tab of Twitter open, I switch to another tab to like look something up, and then I go back to that tab, and I can't find it.
Right, because you're looking for...
I'm looking for the blue bird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you were in London, you weren't looking for celebrities, but you may have seen some. I'm guessing.
Yeah, so that's the reason I was out the past few weeks for the listener's sake. It wasn't
and
just
also because you don't do Comic-Con.
Obviously, I just don't care about nerds yet. I was actually...
That's not true, by the way.
No, it's actually, I care more about nerds yet than you do. I was traveling first, spending some time in rural Oregon with family for... I was celebrating my mom's 60th birthday, which was last year, but we're just kind of like finally getting around to a nice family trip. And then I immediately carted off from there to, I was going to say gorgeous or rainy London, England, but it wasn't really either of those things. It was very mild. The temperatures were like in the 60s and 70s. It only rained the very last day we were there when we weren't planning to do anything. So it was rather pleasant. So it's pleasant London. And yes, even though I live in Los Angeles, I almost never see celebrities, but I managed to see two celebrities in the 5 days I was in London.
Right. So here's, this is kind of like a little bit of a stealth advertising for the Patreon, because this is something we do more. Well, when Tyler's back, we do it more often on the Patreon, a little celebrity sighting guessing game. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can subscribe at patreon.com/battleshippretension. It helps the podcast, it's more show for you, and also given that Tyler has mounting medical costs, it actually is a fun way to help Tyler and get something out of it. So
absolutely,
patreon.com/battleshippretension. Okay, let's, all right, so these are both in London town.
Yes.
Okay.
Though that itself is only a hint for one of them.
So one of them is not a Brit.
Correct.
Okay, so I'll start with the Brit.
Okay.
Male, female,
other? Male.
Male. Older than you and me?
Significantly.
Oh. White?
Yeah.
An old white man.
Imagine that, in London. Yeah.
Is this an actor?
Yes.
Movies, TV, stage, what do we think of him most?
You would think of him most for movies. I'm sure he's done all of the above, but you would think of him most for movies.
Okay. And significantly older.
Yes.
Well, it feels like it probably wasn't Ian McKellen. Was it Ian McKellen?
No, but like that, it's not someone as famous as Ian McKellen, but you're in the right kind of generation. Actor only became more famous when he was already an old man.
Huh. British actor.
Yeah.
Became famous as an old man. So it's not, I don't know, Kenneth Branagh.
No.
It's not Ian Holm.
No, but no, the Ian Holm is about the level of fame, I would say, okay, more than like an Ian McKellen or Kenneth Branagh, who are like name actors. As with Ian Holm, this guy has played lead roles, but is more widely known as a strong supporting player.
Okay. I got to think of some more things to narrow it down, because I'm just going to start throwing out names. Yeah, supporting, but has led movies before.
Yes, and
Tom Courtenay.
No. I was going to say my next hand was including one quite recently. He had a prominent lead role.
A prominent lead role in a recent British movie, I'm guessing?
It's set in Britain. I don't know its, you know, national origin of funding, but yeah, it's
okay. Do you English know if I set. Saw it?
I actually don't know. I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Bill Nighy?
Yeah, it's Bill Nighy.
Nice. I did not see Living. No.
Yeah. We saw him at went to see Groundhog Day on the West End. They made a musical of Groundhog Day, and he was there just wandering the aisles, and we're like, is that Bill Nighy? And then we like kind of saw him wander up closer and like get like a prime seat in the theater, and we're like, that's probably Bill Nighy.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Natalie, my wife Natalie just had a two celebrity sightings at the Tears for Fears concert last night. She saw both
nice.
Both Kumail Nanjiani and Jimmy Simpson.
Who is Jimmy Simpson? I know that name.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as I said it, I was like, I think he's more of a TV guy.
Yeah.
Most recently, he was in, as far as movies, he was in The Starling Girl, which is a good movie. I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, no, I came very close to seeing that one night in Portland, but we didn't quite make it.
He's the Starling father.
okay. The Starling man.
Yeah. But yeah, if you look him up on IMDb, his like known for things are like Westworld and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, sure.
He's definitely more of a TV guy, but he's a good actor. Yeah, but I guess more of a TV guy. Anyway, okay, on to your second one, the non-Brit.
Yeah.
Non-Brit American?
Yes.
Okay, American. Male, female, other?
Male.
Another male. Older than you and I?
Almost, I would guess younger, unless he's just really, unless he's wearing his age well.
Okay. DJ Qualls.
No. Random pull.
Okay. Actor.
Yeah.
And again, just cause I'm asking, is this a Caucasian? Yes or no questions. I'm sticking to, is this a,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I just checked. He is slightly younger than me.
Than you. And you are 37? Six.
Yes. Seven.
Which seven? Okay. Okay. So he's younger than you. Does he have facial hair?
Like,
generally when you think of him?
Ironically, I pulled up his Wikipedia page and he does have facial hair, but you wouldn't think of him with facial hair.
Okay. And this is an American.
Yeah.
Actor.
Yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
Younger than we are, at least. Okay. 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 Here's a, okay. No, never mind. You'll give me the context of how you saw him. Okay, again. Movies, TV, stage?
I'd be surprised if stage. I don't think he's done any TV work, definitely any prominent stuff. Movies for sure.
Movie star or character actor?
On his way towards becoming a movie star, I would say.
Wait, is it Joe Alwyn? No, he's not American.
No, but you're kind of like in the right like wheelhouse.
Okay. So he's a hunk.
Yeah.
Or he's good looking.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And he's American. Everyone I'm thinking of is like not American. Why can't I think of So, okay, was he in anything in 2022 that I would have seen?
Yes, for sure.
So a big 2022 movie?
Yes.
A major release. Was it a studio movie?
Yeah.
Or, Austin Butler?
No.
Okay.
Also, Austin Butler is American. For some reason, I had in my head that he was another one of those disguised Brits.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a studio release. Do you know if I saw it?
I know for sure you saw it.
Okay. Okay. A comedy?
No.
A drama?
No. I would. You wouldn't classify that as that. The movie story, as you say.
Is it a superhero movie?
No, but it is a big summer movie.
A big summer 2022 movie that I definitely saw.
Yeah.
With an up-and-coming young white American male.
Imagine that.
Shit, I can't think of...
What was the biggest movie of 2022?
Like, box office wise, I have no idea.
You would have a reasonable guess that this was the biggest. Maybe it's possible something... Oh, well, actually, it was eclipsed by a more prominent holiday release, but the summer when this came out, it looked like this was pretty unstoppable.
And I saw it.
Yes. Everybody did.
Oh, okay. Was it Top Gun Maverick?
It was Top Gun Maverick.
Okay. So who are the younger... Is that Miles Teller, is it?
No, he's already up and come.
Yeah. Do I know this guy's name then?
I would imagine so. He's decently famous.
Is it the handsome guy?
Yeah. Sure. Maybe you don't know his name.
You know who I'm talking about, like the main other guy who's like...
Describe his character in the movie and then I'll give it to you.
He's like mad that he gets benched for the final run, but then he goes and does the big like saving. He saves Miles Teller at the end.
Yeah. His name is Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell. Yeah.
I thought because of Everybody Wants Some, you would remember his name, but.
Right. Yeah. I should know his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was a fun.
We just saw him walking down the street and Julie and I both went like, is that Glenn Powell? And we didn't want to be like weird about it. But we later looked up some context clues from social media and we're like, that's Glenn Powell.
Wow. Yeah. He also played John Glenn in Hidden Figures.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, all right. Well, he's just riding out the strike in London, I guess.
Yeah. That was a fun way to, kick off the show. Before we get into the topic at hand, I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day. In fact, today I was using them to listen to what is in the running for my favorite album of the year so far. Okay. You might not think of when you think black metal, right? You think Norway. You think
these are things I constantly think.
You think the Celtic region.
Absolutely.
You normally don't think of sunny Los Angeles, but a band called Agriculture and their self-titled debut album, Agriculture, is fantastic. One of the most fun nerdy things about metal is the super granular like genres.
Sure.
And I like when someone takes it upon themselves to get so granular as to invent their own genre. So Agriculture is self-described ecstatic black metal. And I don't know I don't know what that conjures up in your mind, if that's what it sounds like, what it actually sounds like, but it is, it's its own animal here, and it sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com, but if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Bite, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back, and we are ready to jump into the topic. This topic is actually inspired by a friend of the show, Wes Anthony. I recently saw West in person, spent a whole afternoon with West in person for the first time since before the pandemic. I've like Zoomed with him and obviously like text and tweeted and all that stuff, but I had not seen West in person since like probably well before the pandemic. It might have been 5 years. But he and I went to a double feature of movies at the Skirball Center, and then there was a long intermission between the double feature because it was a midday double feature, so they kind of like expected people would get lunch. So there was like an hour in between the two movies.
That's too long.
So we got some food from the cafe and sat out in the courtyard at the Skirball Center, and you know, we're two big movie buffs who are at a movie event and haven't seen each other in years. Obviously, we also love music. He's an even bigger music buff than I am. Like, we have that. So what did we talk about for an hour? That's right, Los Angeles bus and train lines. We talked about public transit for a full hour. And I was like, I thought to myself, like, yeah, we should do an episode about movies about public transit. So let's get into it, shall we? I, as usual, have imposed rules on myself that I didn't foreclose beforehand. So I'll be curious to see how yours lined up. But I basically took public transit to mostly mean like intra-city public transit.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a slightly more expansive area of like, I would count like a commuter line. So if it's, you know, probably within the general city metropolitan area, but like a lot of these, I'm not 100% sure on what their zone of coverage is. It just kind of like seems to kind of fit with the idea.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like, I was talking about when I last time I saw Tyler, I was talking about, we were brainstorming some, and he was saying like, would something like Trans-Siberian or Bullet Train count? And I was like, I don't know if those are publicly funded, but those go intercity, you know? Yeah. And to me, so yeah, I do have at least one on my list that is a commuter line. I'm hoping I'll just come up with more as the
yeah, I had kind of a hard time coming up with some.
Well, I guess we've teased commuter lines, so I'll kick off with Source Code. Source Code is a movie about a commuter line train from, I think, the Chicago suburbs into the heart of the city, right?
I remember Chicago something because I know they go to the Bean.
At the end, and that actually like sort of plays into the Bean actually like plays a role because that's
like, kind of a character in the movie.
But he sees his reflection at the end. That's like a big reveal. So did you lie like Source Code?
Did
you?
I did not like Source Code.
Oh, really?
Because that was Duncan Jones, right?
Is that his name? Duncan, not Duncan Hines. Yeah, Duncan Jones.
Yeah, because I didn't like Moon that much either, and then Source Code came out, and I was like, so we all kind of realize this guy's not that good, right? We're all on board now. Was kind of not into that movie. The only other major commuter line film I think on my list is the Liam Neeson film, The Commuter.
Which I didn't see.
It's kind of silly. I mean, even for a Cole Serra film, but it just kind of escalates this premise a little too far into like a big CGI nonsense when like a lot of the thrill of like a transportation movie is the limits you put on the surroundings. And it kind of like gets a little wacky towards the end, but it's got a strong start. It's not as good as Nonstop, which is the other transportation based movie he made with Liam Neeson.
And that's
an airplane.
Oh, Nonstop is an airplane. Okay. I haven't seen it. All right. Well then let's,
There's another commuter rail movie, but I couldn't remember like if the train actually matters in this. Did you see The Girl on the Train?
I did. Yeah.
I think it's just starts, right?
Yeah, but that's enough. But it is also like the point is that she's divorced and she takes the train to work every day and passes her ex-husband's house. So I do think that, like, the train does, it's not just that that's how it starts. I do think that it's, it plays a bigger role.
The movie was so forgettable that I, yeah, like,
I was about to say the same thing. Like, the fact that I remember that much about the movie is
pretty impressive.
Impressive because, yeah, just so, such a bore.
I know. It was one of those like post Gone Girl movies that like none of them really captured even an ounce of what that movie's got going for it.
Yep. All right. So here's what I'm going to start with. Here are the ones that came immediately to mind for me when I thought of this topic.
Sure.
The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Yeah.
Is the first one, which I've only ever seen the original. I know you're a fan of the remake as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not as good as the original because the original is one of like the greats and kind of define its own genre. But I have a hard time thinking that people think it's as bad as they say it is without just like only thinking of it in comparison to the original, because it's pretty solid on its own. And, you know, Denzel and Tony Scott can certainly put together a film, and you got James Gandolfini in there. And yeah, it's a really solid time with the movies.
How many times? Okay, because James Gandolfini is also in Crimson Tide,
True Romance.
True Romance, yeah. So is that it for him and Tony Scott?
I think so. Offhand, that's what I got.
That could be a fun triple feature.
Oh yeah.
All right, but I don't want to. I mean, this episodes like this where we just have a topic and like bounce off Bob's movies back and forth are fun. But I think Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 really like gets it. What I'm saying when I'm talking about a movie is like about public transit, because it's not just that it takes place. It's like hostages on a subway train that stopped in the middle of the subway. The hero of the movie is like a guy who works for the transit authority or whatever they call it in New York. And the geographical details, not that I know New York like the back of my hand, from what I've read, the geographical details of the movie are spot on. Like, it actually is, everything is exactly where it would be. We see how a city like New York City is so attached and fate is tied to its public transit. You know, when these things shut down, it shuts down the whole city. The mayor is involved, you know,
right?
And it's a little bit different than if a train line shuts down, even in a city like Los Angeles, which has public transit, but isn't like the default way of getting around the city.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the big thing also that Pelham introduces as far as this episode goes, which is very common across a lot of these movies, is like the idea of the public transportation being a kind of melting pot of like, you get all types in there and everyone's reliant on it and we're all on together kind of thing. It really like represents the city in microcosm. And especially for a city like New York, where you really get people of all social stratas on there, it becomes very important to not only just like any kind of social commentary thing, but just it fills out a rich tapestry of characters and helps lend it some liveliness.
Yeah. And I miss that from living in Chicago and taking, public transit, which I just thought of this now, it's a tiny little thing, but in The Fugitive, the idea that one of Tommy Lee Jones's guys can pick out the sound of an elevated subway train specifically, like, is like a little plot detail. But anyway, living in Chicago, it's the same thing. Like, I mean obviously the super rich people, you know, have cars or whatever, but it is everyone. That's something that, like, I've taken public transit regularly for most of the time that I've lived in Los Angeles. It's never quite been that, and it's even less that post COVID.
I'll bet. Yeah. I used to take it a little bit when I was first living here. And even then I was kind of surprised at the range of people you would see on the bus. Cause I think the subway, at least, like, there's a bit more of like, I don't know, maybe classiness to it. I do feel like the bus is the most looked down upon of all forms of public transit. And so people do whatever they can to avoid riding the bus.
Yeah, which is too bad, because buses are cool. But I was guilty of that when I lived in Chicago, that I would like,
sure,
take, I would go out of my way to like, well, I mean, there's so many, so much of the city is connected by trains. I'd be like, I'll take this train line to the other train line. I could have taken a bus. I was wrong for doing that. I should have taken the bus more in Chicago.
Yeah, that was definitely true in Boston as well. There were two parts of town that were very popular college destinations that were not connected at all by rail. And so you'd have to take the rail back into the center of town and then back out to the other suburb in order to get between them. Or you could just hop on a bus.
Yeah, yeah. So what else initially came to mind for me? The other one that came to mind is Speed, which is both a bus movie and a train movie at the end.
But also an LA movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but absolutely what you were talking about, the bus being a melting pot there, like, you know, like all these different, folks on this bus from different walks of life. Although I mean, the one thing I think they have in common is that they're like I said about public transit, even in Chicago, like none of them is rich.
Yeah.
You know,
it's much more of a working class environment. I mean, it's been a long, I've only seen Speed once, honestly. It's not been a major force in my life, so I don't have great recall of it, but doesn't it
watch it again. It's
probably,
it's really good.
Doesn't it have like the necessary, like, businessman who wants to sell everybody out for his own need?
Alan Ruck is the businessman.
Okay.
But he's not like the, I know the kid, the architect you're thinking.
Yeah,
of,
right.
I don't really think there's any of anyone like that on there.
For Alan Ruck then.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if businessman, I mean, he's a guy in a suit.
Sure. That's what I mean.
He could be like on his way to a job interview, but I don't know if he's
sure.
No, but he has, so anyway, I always like that movie. Is the screenplay is credited to Graham, what's his name? I can't remember.
I actually just had that page up, and I can tell you
the guy who created Justified, like
Graham Young.
So he's done well for himself, but I think even he has publicly admitted that like Joss Whedon did a like huge uncredited rewrite, and most of what people like, especially in terms of dialogue, is Joss Whedon's, and knowing Joss Whedon's work and watching it with that in mind, you can definitely see it. But there's a very Joss Whedon-y line where Keanu's like hanging under the bus as it's going to, like, he's like sticking his head down under the floor to see the bomb, and he's got Alan Ruck on the phone with Jeff Daniels relaying what he says, and then when he sees the size of the bomb, Keanu Reeves goes, "Fuck me," and Alan Ruck hesitates and goes, "Oh darn." Yeah, I like that. Okay.
Question about what you're describing Alan Ruck's character. Have you ever worn a suit to a job interview?
Yeah, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I never have had cause to. I've never gone to a job interview like that.
I've worn a suit. I've definitely worn like a sport coat and trousers.
Okay.
I don't know if I've worn a suit to a job interview. That's a good point.
It might just be a generational thing of like, we're just past that. And the suit coat and trousers is the new version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a coworker who wears t-shirts every single day.
Yeah.
And, this is years and years ago. There was an opening like at our workplace, that we were both applying for, and the day of the interview, he wore a suit. It was like so strange, because he ended up getting the job and I didn't.
Well, there you go.
But I have since, you know, don't worry about me. I have since been promoted, and now he and I are, our peers and colleagues again. But that was a strange thing to see a guy who's like a dedicated t-shirt every day guy come in his suit. All right. I'm trying to think of the other ones that came to me right away. Well, I guess Speed. Yeah. So there's the bus thing we're talking about. That's the main thing, but also it ends on the subway.
Right.
But it's the LA subway and it's still under construction. And part of it is that like, it's empty.
You know? Oh yeah.
Which brings me to mind, brings Collateral to mind, which is a movie that's mostly about getting around in a taxi, but does kind of start and end, as I recall, it's been a long time since I've seen it, in the LA subway system, and like specifically talking about how kind of sparse the LA subways are and how like someone could die and just ride like whose body could just like ride the train all day because there's so few people, which is not true. I mean, it's not true that there are a few people, but I remember watching Collateral on DVD with my girlfriend at the time, who had been to Los Angeles and I had never been. I think we were already planning on moving here because that's what, 2004?
Yeah.
And I moved in 2005. So I think we were already planning on moving out here. And she'd been here. We were living in Chicago. And she was trying to tell me before we had even watched the movie. She was like, had come back from Los Angeles, and she was like, because the subway in Chicago is like New York or whatever. It's just like you go down the stairs and there's a tiny little platform with a thing on each side, you know? And she was trying to tell me like, every subway station in Los Angeles is like a cathedral with a different theme and these huge vaulted roofs and stuff. And yeah, you do see I think it's a Blue Line station. I haven't seen Collateral in so long that I don't remember. But yeah, we were watching it and she was like, oh my God, I was just telling you, look, like, look how enormous the subway stations are.
Look how ridiculous amounts of space they have out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Collateral.
I don't know if it's, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Collateral also does the thing I love of like tent set pieces on a subway where they're going from stop to stop and they're like trying to get out of the cars and like then get back into the cars at the last second and moving between the cars and all that stuff. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think about the French Connection. That's another one that has a huge subway scene that I should have put on here. Oh man, I keep thinking of more that aren't on my list. But another one that came to mind right away, which is probably not true of you or most people, but is a movie that I happen to love, The Midnight Meat Train.
That came to mind fairly quickly, but I haven't seen it, so I can't say anything else except to say that a movie exists called The Midnight Meat Train.
Yeah, and Bradley Cooper, you can imagine him being in this movie like a pre, like when he wasn't playing an A-lister yet. Yeah. Although actually, yes, it was pre-Hangover, because what year is Midnight Meat Train?
Oh gosh, I want to say like 06.
Yeah, it might be
maybe 08 even,
but I think even it was even made, I think it sat for a long time because I remember there was a whole thing about a change in like leadership at Lionsgate, and that was a movie that like the new regime didn't really care for, and it kind of sat around for a while.
It was 2008.
Okay, but it was probably filmed considered before that. I saw it. The New Art did a midnight screening with the director.
That's fun.
Whose name I'm forgetting. It's kind of a way of saying like, this movie's good, you should watch it. Like Lionsgate is trying to bury it. Anyway, but it's Bradley Cooper plays a journalist, I think, who discovers a certain line of the train. If you get on the train at the right line at the right time, at the right time of like in the middle of the night, it takes you to some sort of otherworldly part of the city. And there's, and Vinnie Jones is a man who walks up and down that train slaughtering people to deliver them to the final destination. Fun movie. I mean, fun in a, like a dark way, right. But yeah, still fun. Also, I was talking about, I mentioned Triple Features before, about the James Gandolfini, Tony Scott Triple Feature.
Sure.
A Triple Feature that I've always wanted to, like, if I could have thought of a fourth one, and maybe you can help me.
Okay.
It would have been like a commentary, back when Tyler and I used to do those. Maybe we'll do a commentary marathon again someday. But the idea is Seven, Constantine, and The Midnight Meat Train, all movies that use pre-gentrification downtown Los Angeles as an anonymous urban hellscape. Because they're all movies that never say that it's Los Angeles, but they shoot in downtown Los Angeles pre, you know, because I guess downtown LA kind of started gentrifying in the mid-aughts around the time of Midnight Meat Train, but then the 2008 financial crisis like put a big hold on that, and the gentrification of downtown really didn't pick up again until I don't know, the early 2010s. I don't know if you could think, if you or the listeners can think of another one, maybe we could do a commentary marathon someday. But
yeah, I'd have to think through and then do some research to see if they actually did shoot here.
Yeah, but it's a part of, I mean, like, it's not necessarily something that I don't know how I feel about. I'm not pro gentrification. I just want to make that clear, but it is interesting. I guess it's just interesting that version of downtown Los Angeles is kind of lost. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there are some small pockets of it, but yeah, in any sort of mass way, yeah, it's pretty gone.
That's, I mean, the show, I keep going back to Joss Whedon, but the TV show Angel, which very clearly took place in Los Angeles, really took advantage of the fact that in the late 90s, early 2010s, downtown LA after dark was largely empty.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's still not after dark necessarily, but I remember, at least when I moved here, and it could have changed since then, but anytime we would go there on a weekend afternoon, I just felt like it was just an apocalypse had happened or something, like it was just abandoned.
Yeah, I definitely remember, like, the first time my mom was visiting and we wrote the Angels, like, California Plaza or something like that. Yeah, it did feel like I Am Legend or something. It's just like there's no one around.
Yeah.
These big, big imposing buildings. Okay. I think those are the main ones that came immediately to mind for me.
Some others that came immediately to mind for me. I guess some of these are like more scene based than like, well, actually, no, there's one big one that's definitely a bus movie, and it's Jim Jarmusch's Patterson.
Yeah, I have that too.
Yeah. Which is like, it's like, that's like how we hope the bus will be, right? We're just like a calm collection of weird characters who are all just getting by day to day. Not like the unpredictable mass of humanity you often encounter. But
well, that's like one thing that's happened in Speed, in Patterson, in a lot of movies on buses, you get on the bus and everyone has a seat. And in Los Angeles, that is not the case, especially at rush hour. You know, you're lucky to get a seat if you get on the line early enough. There are times when I take the red line to Wilshire in Vermont, and then I take the Wilshire bus to my work. Don't look, I'm not going to say anything more about where I work, but there were times when I was pre-COVID, when I was going to work earlier. Now that the sort of work-life balance thing and work from home thing is a little bit more fluid, I tend to work at home in the morning later and then go into work after rush hour. That's what I do now. But there were times that I would, instead of getting off of Wilshire in Vermont, would go to MacArthur Park further away from my destination, just because I knew there'd be more seats on the bus.
Sure.
Like two stops, because it was like two bus stops early, same bus line, two stops early, I could get a seat.
That's real estate, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patterson is getting to the point where it might be my favorite Jim Jarmusch movie.
Oh man. It's up there for me, but Dead Man is gonna be hard to beat.
Yeah.
I love Dead Man so much.
I've got some diminishing returns with Dead Man, but I do still love it.
All right. What are some other? Well, okay. You mentioned just little scenes.
Yeah.
And now I don't know if this is cheating or not, but I have a number of a few movies where the subway itself maybe isn't a big part of it, but subway stations, or at least a scene with a subway station. So, Ghost and The Matrix, two very different movies, but both have very memorable scenes set in subway stations. In The Matrix, it's a fight. In Ghost, it's Patrick Swayze learning from another ghost played by, is his name Vincent Schiavelli? He died a while ago, but he was the science teacher.
More about The Matrix. I've actually never seen Ghost.
Oh, okay. Well, Vincent, I think his name's Vincent Schiavelli. He was the science teacher in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You'd recognize him if you saw him. He plays another ghost who teaches Patrick Swayze how to move things in the real world, like, because he's non-corporeal, but he teaches him how to focus enough to move stuff and have an effect on the world. And it's a great performance from Vincent Schiavelli, because he's like kind of like a bitter asshole ghost who's doing all this reluctantly just to get Patrick Swayze to leave him alone. It's a variation on the the action movie where the hero has to go like it gets defeated and then has to go away and train before coming back. It's kind of a version of that. But Ghost, cool movie. Rewatched it for the first time in forever during the pandemic. I like it. I like Ghost.
It's on my list for sure. I want to see it sometime.
Another one with just a scene in a subway station. Okay. Guys, I'm sorry, but spoilers for Rainer Werner Fassbinder's Fox and His Friends.
Okay.
The main character dies at the end in a subway station and people just like step over his body.
Classic Germans.
but they got places to be. They can change their schedule around. And then here's one that's a real stretch. But I enjoy this movie too much not to mention it. The lesser talked about Guillermo del Toro movie Mimic, his first American movie, I think, was Mimic. The creature in the movie, its hiding space is the tunnels of an abandoned subway line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen it.
I mean, it's not great, but it's fun. It's definitely a fun movie to watch once you know Guillermo del Toro and like see what he's trying to do, you know, because there's something mm-hmm. like the way that the art direction of the abandoned subway stations and tunnels is very cool, you know, and kind of gothic.
Right.
And he leans on as much like practical monster effects as he can. There's definitely some del Toro in there, even though I don't, my understanding is that he did not have a good experience making the movie.
Right. Yeah.
Cause
he was working for Harvey Weinstein and a few people.
Right.
Did. I remembered one of these movies on my list is a definite subway movie, and that's Ho Xiao Shen's Cafe Lumiere. It's been a while since I've seen this one, so I don't remember the specifics of it, but it's about a young woman and who I believe she's like studying the subway system in Tokyo, and she meets a guy who's like studying this composer, and their interests start like intersecting where they start like recording sounds on the subway and like folding that into compositions and stuff. It's a really, really cool movie that really gets at the way that subways are kind of like a harmonious way of interlinking a city together. It has some of the most beautiful photography on subway cars. It has this one shot that's really unbelievable where like I think we're seeing it from her point of view. She's like riding the car and like looking out the subway window. And then another subway comes up that has the guy that she knows on it. And so somehow they like linked up the shoot of the movie. So for these two cars to intersect and have them look at each other across from the lines. It's really unbelievable. Yeah. And there's a lot of films that could be my favorite Ho Xiao Shen movie, but this might be my favorite because it just feels the rhythms just right.
Speaking of foreign films that are definitely subway movies, I don't necessarily recommend this movie, but there's a 2003 movie called Control, K-O-N-T-R-O-L-L. I don't really remember exactly what the plot is. It's about like people who work for the subway and if I'm remembering correctly, like the thing that is notable about it is that it takes place entirely in subway stations and subway trains. You never see the world outside, I think. But the movie was among people who were following foreign film at the time. It got quite a bit of notice and was enough to get its director a Hollywood career. Which he turned around and made the super cool, I think underrated horror movie Vacancy with Luke Wilson and Kate Beckinsale. It's a good movie. But then he did Armored, which I didn't see, which is an armored truck robbery movie. And then he did Predators. And from there, he seems to have to TV. Yeah. Anyway, his name's Nimrod Antal. But yeah, I don't know. But I don't know. I don't remember thinking. I think remember thinking that Control was a little overhyped and a little bit like self-consciously cool, you know, in a lot of ways. But it's still a cool thing to make a movie entirely in the subway system, and it gave us Vacancy, which is just a badass movie. Did you ever see Vacancy?
No, yeah. I've seen neither of these movies, and I didn't see his Predator movie either. I like some self-consciously cool movies, so
okay, like Control?
Not against it.
Yeah, I'm gonna find out if it's streaming anywhere. What else do you have?
I've got
a bunch more.
Yeah, some other stuff that's more just like scene based. Spider-Man 2, of course, has the great fight between Spider-Man and Doc Ock on. A non-existent elevated train in New York that itself is kind of like it does the like thing of like the train represents the city, because then Spider-Man gets unmasked and all the people are like we won't tell kind of thing. Let's see, I guess sticking with New York, Chantal Akerman's News from Home has a lot of great 70s New York subway footage on it. And she shoots all, I mean, the film takes place all over the city. It takes place. It's a documentary that's just like showing daily life in New York. As she reads letters from her mother. but a lot of that takes place on the subway. And when I think of that movie, I often think of it subway footage.
Control is streaming, for free on Plex, but is also, rentable from Vudu.
I've yet to try Plex.
I watched something on it. It was fine. Okay, we seem to have stuck with subways for now. So let's stick with subways and we'll end up going back to buses.
Okay.
But another just like scene-based, Amelie has like multiple subway scenes.
Sure, yeah.
Isn't that where the photo booth is? I haven't watched it in a long time.
Sounds the right.
Photo booth is in a subway station. Yeah.
I do not care for that movie. I'll say
You know what? I mean, I loved it at the time. I have no idea if I would, because the last Jeunet film that I saw was Micmacs, and I did not care for it at all.
Yeah, that was rough going.
When I went back, and I had never seen Delicatessen, and I watched that like maybe 5 years ago, and I didn't like it. So like, I'm almost like hesitant to rewatch City of Lost Children and Amelie. Because I liked these movies. What if I don't like them when I go back? Because I'm not a Jeunet fan, but I loved it at the time. I went to accidentally we went to the bar cafe from the movie. We were in Montmartre and we had something else to do, and we were like, a big thing that we do when we're visiting another city, Natalie and I, is have sort of loose plans that are kind of spaced out, and then if we can walk from place to place and discover stuff on the way. So that's what we were doing, because we were walking from Montmartre and we were like, we have a bunch of time until whatever dinner or movie, whatever we're doing that night, let's just stop along the way. And we were like, okay, oh, here's a cafe, rest. We're walking down this steep hill, let's rest our legs in this cafe. And then it doesn't take long to be inside. They don't hide the fact that Amelie was shot once you're inside.
They are very forward about it. Yeah, we ran across it as well, because it's a pretty prominently located cafe, as I recall. Like I think even if I wasn't looking for it, which I think we were looking for it when we came across it, it would have caught my eye anyway, just because of the geography of it, if I remember correctly.
Well, my memory of where it is, because like you think, I tend to think of Montmartre as a little like almost like a village on the hill in the middle of the city. And when you come up the stairs or the funicular or something, when you come up from that way, that's exactly what it is. But then on the other side of it, it's just a steep road back down to the city that has stuff along. And so the cafe is more along that road than I would have thought. I would have thought it was more at the top of the city.
Oh, sure.
At the top of the hill. It's more like on the road down to the city. So I think it depends on which way you approach Momart.
Sure.
That's how you come across it. All right. This is not an episode of a movies about cafes, though.
But there's a idea. Bookmark that. Yeah. I guess sticking with Paris, I was having some trouble thinking of too many like prominent subway stuff in Paris set movies, even though like there's scenes in like Band of Outsiders that it's on the subway, but nothing like too prominent. I just watched a Jacques Rivette movie the other day called Gang of Four from the 90s that doesn't have much on the subway, but it has these cool little interstitial things kind of like as scene transitions that are just photography, mostly at night on the subway. And it's just kind of a good way to transition and kind of keep the mood, because most of Rivette's movies actually, I think, capture the way I experienced Paris more than any other filmmaker, which is like a little weird and seedy in a way that isn't immediately obvious, but like it always feels like there's some secret undercurrent that I'm not quite a part of. And he kind of includes the subway as part of that in Gang of Four.
Cool. Yeah. All right.
Well, I guess with subways, I was going to say, speaking of unnerving subways, you saw Watcher, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't see Watcher. Okay. So so Watcher is about this woman who can tell or suspects, but can't quite prove that a man's kind of like following her and stalking her and watching her. And she eventually has a confrontation with this guy who, again, she can't prove that he's done anything wrong and is reticent to like directly confront him about it. But finds herself sitting directly across from him on the subway. And, you know, it's a horror movie. So, yeah, he is actually following her. She's not just making it up. And so he knows what's going on. She knows what's going on. But neither of them is coming out and saying it. And it's so tense and great and such a great, like, use of the subway as a place where just anyone could end up theoretically, but which you are just kind of trapped on when you get on, because there's not like even a bus, you know, it has the option of like you could like fake an emergency and pull the bus over. When you're in the subway, you are in the subway.
Yeah. Okay. My other subway ones are all like mostly bummers.
Nice.
Fruitvale Station.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Yeah, for sure.
Joker has multiple subway scenes.
Man, I'm glad I flushed enough of that movie out of my head to forget this, but I'll take your word.
Well, I guess now I think about the Batman had like, I think the first time we like see the Batman, it's like on the platform at an elevated train station, right?
Yeah. And I actually thought of Batman Begins as well, which has a decent amount of stuff on kind of an elevated train throughout its version of Gotham, including the finale where he like kills but doesn't kill Ra's al Ghul. He's like, you know, I can't kill you, but I don't have to let you live. And he just like sends him plummeting across on the subway. Yeah.
And then I included the movie Just Another Girl on the IRT, because IRT is the Interborough Rapid Transit, which is a public transit line. The movie isn't actually really about, it's just like a description of the character. It's not about riding the train.
More Hollywood lies.
Yeah, but it's a good movie, although also kind of a rough watch at times, that references a subway. So I think that's all I have for subway. Well, I have one other that I thought of that I think is commuter rail related, but it's a station, not the actual train itself, and that's the whole Patty Considine sequence from the Bourne Ultimatum. Is that train station, a very crowded train station?
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that's such a good scene. I gotta rewatch that movie. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. I say that movie specifically because like I like the other two Bourne movies, but Ultimatum is really where it comes home for me. Okay, I got a few more subway ones.
Okay, and then we can get back to buses.
Yeah. Let me make sure I'm catching all of these. The finale of Carlito's Way takes place at it's either Grand Central or Penn Station, I can't remember. But it starts on with him like narrowly escaping these guys who are chasing him by hopping on a subway, and then culminates in the station. And when they get to the station, De Palma, being De Palma, does it all in like one long take, and it's super, super cool. And I know like long take stuff is like so overplayed now, but this was back when you really had to work it because it was all with film, and De Palma can really fold it into the storytelling and more that's just then just like showing off. But it's a great, great sequence. While You Were Sleeping, it doesn't take place on the subway, but of course, this is like such a sign of the times that like this was a job somebody had to have to sell people tokens. Now it's all just done by machines, but she's like a token seller when she meets Peter Gallagher, right? Who then gets mugged and thrown down on the tracks. On the town, the guys, the sailors, first when they get to New York, hop on the subway, start going about town, and that's where Gene Kelly falls in love with Miss Turnstiles, who's like the glamour girl on posters on the subway. Have you never seen On the Town?
I've never seen On the Town.
Oh man, On the Town is so great.
Hey, I can't see all of them. I'll see I know, it eventually.
I'm just saying, once you do, I'm jealous. It's a great movie. Pick Up on South Street. Like all the pickpocketing takes place on the subway. And it's really that's some really good, well done sequences, because like the pickpocketing isn't exactly the source of the film's tension, but there's a lot of great tension that gets introduced in that.
But it's the inciting incident.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, speaking of noir movies, it's such a tiny part of the movie, but I can't believe I had mentioned Angel's Flight earlier and didn't mention the movie Hollow Triumph, sometimes also referred to as The Scar.
Sure.
But there's a part where bad guys are chasing our guy, who is also a bad guy because it's a noir movie. And they chase him onto the Angel's Flight as it's going up, and he kicks the guy out the back door and like he falls down the hill of the Angel's Flight. It's just a brief scene, but I did like, it was definitely me doing like the Leonardo DiCaprio point. Like, oh, it's the Angel's Flight. And that would have been the actual Angel's Flight at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you said it was a brief scene, but it's Angel's Flight. It would have to be a brief scene.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm just realizing that maybe people, is Angel's Flight known outside of Los Angeles enough that people know what I'm talking about?
If you described it, I'm sure they'd recognize it from various movies, but you probably should describe it.
Yeah, it's a funicular that the very short train line that goes up the hill from Hill Street to right now. Yeah, these days it goes to the a plaza where they sometimes have like live events and stuff. But when it was actually in use, it was like half a block further. I can't keep. I don't know, east. I can't remember where. And it wasn't just a tourist thing. It actually connected to a neighborhood called Bunker Hill. That was a neighborhood on a hill, not unlike Momar, but if you follow Los Angeles history, the story of Bunker Hill is a contentious and I would say sad one. The city insists to this day that they tore down the neighborhood because of blight, where most reasonable people say that Bunker Hill was torn down in an abuse of eminent domain used to try and keep major business headquarters and operations from fleeing to the suburbs or other cities. And so they knocked down a neighborhood of working class people to build skyscrapers in the 50s. There are movies like Crisscross is a movie that prominently features Bunker Hill. Los Angeles, by the way, has a history of doing this because they did the same thing to build Dodger Stadium in Chavez Ravine.
Sure.
They just kicked people out and took over the land. I think they did a similar thing for like an LAX expansion that never happened, because there's like a weird like ghost neighborhood by LAX. I don't know if you can find it on YouTube. There's people like YouTube videos of people like, it's like a perfect like little suburban neighborhood that is no one lives in.
Oh, weird. Yeah, no idea. Yeah. Anyway, but now so Angel's Flight is just like
Hill.
Yeah, and now Angel's Flight is just like a tourist thing. And most prominently of recent movies, you can see it in La La Land. And yes, that kind of got some more customers through the door. But it's like one of those things that like mostly operates, but like is occasionally just broken. So if you're visiting Los Angeles and you really want to go on an Angel's Flight, maybe look up if it's running that week, because it could go either way.
It falls apart a lot. In fact, I think at the time that La La Land came out, it was
operational. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Cause I remember thinking like, oh, if anyone's going to try and like come and like recreate that cute kiss, they're not going to be able to do it right now, but now you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or as I would say, it was the last time I was fall 2021, I think is the last time I rode the Angel's Flight.
That's much more recently than me. I can't remember the last time I was on it. My last Subway movies are two of a genre that I know there's more of, but I think these are the only two ones I've seen, of following different paths of people either catching or missing a train. That's both in Kieslowski's Blind Chance and more mainstreamly in Sliding Doors, of following two parallel storylines of whether or not somebody caught a train, which is a very relatable incident, because everyone who's ridden the trains frequently misses a train and thinks, how much better my life would be if I'd only caught that train.
Okay, on to buses.
I think so.
Or back to buses, because we talked about Patterson and Speed.
Yeah.
Did you ever see, I think it's Michel Gondry, a movie called The We and the I?
No.
It's a really interesting movie, because it's a real time movie, I can't remember if it's Queens, somewhere in greater New York City, where
Wikipedia says the Bronx.
Okay. A bunch of kids on the last day of school, like high school kids on the last day of school, take the city bus like back home, and so everyone piles on the bus and we get like little backstories and stuff. And Michel Gondry being the sort of like, Rube Goldborgian sort of fantasist that he can be. There are even like things that are like flashbacks, but they still take place on the bus. If that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
So you never leave the bus once the kids get, you see the kids, before the bus. In fact, there's one thing that sticks in my mind, because I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that exists, but like at the high school where they go, the kids aren't allowed to have their cell phones, so the bodega across the street has a little like side business going where it charges like $1 a day to hold on to people's cell phones. So, like the beginning of the movie, you see the kids like all drop off their cell phones and put them in like individual envelopes or whatever, and then when they get out of school, they immediately go pick up their cell phones and then get on the bus. I don't know why that stuck with me. It's not like an important part of the movie, but just the idea that like, yeah, that would be a little like, that feels very New York to like have that kind of spontaneous black market economy pop up around a need like that. But so the kids are riding the bus, and so one of the interesting things about the movie is that as the movie goes on in real time, the cast keeps getting smaller, because people like their stop and get off. I don't think it's a it's definitely not one of Michel Gondry's best movies, but it's definitely interesting and novel enough to be worth the watch.
Right on. Yeah, I've not seen much Gondry outside of like the major stuff that he did. I don't know, are there other ones that we should be
obviously like he did Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah.
Other than that, like I didn't see Science of Sleep.
Yeah, like I hated Science of Sleep.
I didn't see The Green Hornet. I completely forgot that existed.
Oh, I kind of like that one.
I haven't seen either, because I haven't seen Be Kind Rewind.
Now I can't remember if I even saw that.
but I feel like there was something else.
There's, I guess I'm just thinking he made a few movies over the past like 10 years, 10, 15 years. Yeah. And I don't think I've seen any of them.
Yeah. But he will always be the guy who made the White Stripes Fell in Love with a Girl video.
There you go.
Which is just one of the coolest things ever. Oh, looks like he's got one coming out this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. The Book of Solutions. I read about this.
Supposed to be good?
I can't remember. I just think I remember reading, like, let's see, where did it? It premiered at Cannes just a couple months ago, 3 months ago.
Okay.
And I guess it's already been released in France.
It would.
No U.S. date listed on IMDb, at least. Okay, so that's the We in the Eye. Trying to think of other... I don't have as many bus movies. Do you have others?
I only have a couple. I just watched one today that had been on my list for a long time, and I used this episode as an excuse to myself to... or force myself to watch it, called Mr. Thank You. It's a Japanese movie from the 30s. That's a very pleasant movie. It's just about the friendliest bus driver you've ever met in your entire life, driving a bus, carrying people through the mountains of Japan from town to town. And he's called Mr. Thank You because he always thanks everybody and everybody always thanks him. But it's also like, has these like tiny little moments of completely devastating things. They'll like pass like this old man and they'll be like, oh yes, that's the old man who had to sell off his two daughters 20 years ago. Now he's the loneliest man in Japan. And then they just like go back on the bus, like cheerfully. And so it's one of those weird movies. That's like super pleasant, but also like kind of quietly depressing. But really good movie. The flip side of that is Seijin Suzuki's 50s bus movie called 8 Hours of Terror. So these people are on a train that breaks down in the middle of, I haven't seen this one in a while. It's on Criterion though, if people haven't seen it. Train breaks down in the middle of like a storm of some kind. And they're like, well, we got this bus we can take you on, but the storm's still going and the bus has to traverse these cliffs. So it starts to develop this kind of like Wages of Fear energy of like, will we even make it kind of thing?
Oh, okay.
And then gangsters take over the bus. It's a super cool movie. And if you've ever watched Seijin Suzuki movies and been frustrated that they're all a bunch of nonsense, this is like a very stripped down, like almost kind of like bare knuckle thriller. That's really, really good.
Well, speaking of, I guess people, you know, tense people, people taking over a bus or whatever.
Sure.
Did you ever see The Siege, Edward Zwick's The Siege?
No, I've not.
Well, it's about a series of, this is like a pre 9/11 movie about a series of terrorist attacks in New York. And one of the main ones that people remember because it was prominently focused in the trailer is, a city bus is taken over by terrorists and, they end up blowing it up and killing everybody.
All right.
But yeah, this was like, so I worked at a video store during 9/11. And in a lot of the same way that everyone was watching Contagion at the beginning of COVID, we couldn't keep our like one copy of The Siege in the store after 9/11. Cause, it was like the only reference point that people could.
Yeah.
Think of. I don't know. I remember thinking it was, I've always like known that Edward Zwick is problematic.
Yeah.
You know, he made like two of the most blatant white savior movies of all time.
The like key reference points for the white savior narrative.
Yeah. And then, I mean, he's continued to work. And I mean, the last thing I saw of his was 2018's Trial by Fire, which I guess is the last feature he made.
I was gonna say I'd be surprised if he did anything more recently than that.
But he did the Jack Reacher sequel. That doesn't seem like it's in his wheelhouse.
Oh, that's right. That movie is god awful.
I didn't see it.
And it's strange that it's so bad because like Tom Cruise usually makes good movies, love him or hate him. He can put together good production. And frankly, Edward Zwick at least can put together a good movie, like at least on a sequence by sequence basis.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie's got like nothing going for it.
Yeah. But what that reminds me, so The Siege, obviously fictional, but there's a Brazilian documentary called Bus 174.
Okay.
Which is about a sort of real life situation, not a terrorist, but just a guy with a gun took over a city bus and it turned into a long hostage situation. But what's interesting about the documentary is that the subject of the documentary isn't these events that happened. The subject of the documentary is how drastically and ultimately tragically the Brazilian law enforcement fucked this up and made everything worse than it should have been. It's like a very damning critique of it's either Rio de Janeiro or Sao Paulo. It's one of the two major cities. Rio. It's a critique of the Rio Police Department. Really compelling stuff, but they really do fuck things up, and it's kind of a hard watch by the end. Anyway. So I'm trying to think what else I have for buses that isn't a fucking bummer, but
I definitely have one that isn't a fucking bummer. And it's not a prominent like bus movie, but in Mars Attacks, Pam Grier drives a bus. And when we first meet her, she's driving a bus around and catches her kids in an arcade when they're supposed to be at school or something. And she like stops the bus and like yanks them on the bus and makes a big scene about it in front of all her passengers, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Also, in terms of motherhood and buses, at the beginning of Almodovar's Live Flesh, Penelope Cruz has a brief cameo as the person who eventually becomes the main character's mother, but we just have this brief scene of her giving birth to him on a bus at the beginning of the movie.
I don't remember that part. I saw that movie a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
I think All About My Mother would have been the first Almodovar that I saw, but it was... And that's like 99.
Yeah.
Right. When Talk to Her came out in 2002, Talk to Her was the first Almodovar movie that I fell in love with. I mean, I liked All About My Mother at the time, but
that's still my favorite. Talk to Her is so good.
And so because I worked at a video store at the time, I think I rented every Almodovar that we had at the time. Mm. So I definitely saw Live Flesh and I definitely saw Law of Desire. Some of the early ones, but Life Flesh was interesting to watch because it was like after Javier Bardem had started to become like because he had been in Spanish movies forever, but I don't think it was really until Before Night Falls that like
right.
American film lovers knew who he was, and like it was awesome when he like showed up in Miami Vice or whatever,
right.
But and then watching Life Flash, like it was fun to see him like pre his American fame. I'm pretty much out of movies, actually. I'm realizing, except for the one that I'm saving for last.
Okay.
Oh, I skipped a Subway one that I really like.
Bring it on.
The movie isn't about the Subway.
Sure.
But Spike Jonze's Her is a movie that like imagines a almost utopian future
right.
of like civic engagement and public transit. And I love that there's a great scene. He's essentially going on a date with his,
right.
You know, operate his OS. Normally I don't like, you know, taking liberties with geography, but when it's a science fiction future set movie, it's fine.
Yeah.
You see him at what is the Hollywood and Western subway, Red Line subway station, sorry, B line. They're changing it from colors to letters, subway station, which is a cool one. It's got like a curving hallway that goes up to the street, and it's got these like multicolored like tiles on the wall. So it's cool to look at visually. And that's probably why Spike Jonze chose to shoot it, but he has him come instead of what is he going to up the stairs? He doesn't come up at Hollywood and Western. He comes up at like Venice Beach.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. So,
yeah. Cause sorry. That came out before we even had the expo line down to Santa Monica. So the idea of a train running to the beach was like, oh my God, can you even imagine?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have are on
crap. Yeah, I think you just mic just unplugged or something.
I know I bumped the cord like an idiot. Okay. The remaining movies I have are on forms of transportation that may or may not fit the bill here. So you tell me. But I thought of the trolley from Meet Me in St. Louis. Ring, ring, ring goes the bell.
Okay. Yeah. Trolleys count. Trolleys count.
I would say trolleys count. There's also some good trolley action in Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which takes place in New Orleans.
Okay. I've never seen that movie, but I've ridden that trolley.
There you go. And then Julie helpfully reminded me that the ferry might count as public transportation. Let's say
the ferry would. Yeah.
So on that tack, Roman Polanski's Ghost Rider has some great ferry action. And it, in fact, starts with this very haunting image of a single car having been abandoned on a ferry. And a lot of the mystery revolves around how did that car get left there? Tony Scott's Deja Vu is about the bombing of a ferry. And it's a time travel movie. So we keep going back to the ferry, back to the ferry, back to the ferry to figure out what went wrong there and what happened. And then Christopher Nolan's Insomnia. I don't remember much about it, but I know there was at least the initial confrontation between Al Pacino and Robin Williams takes place on the ferry.
Well, you mentioned Christopher Nolan. I mean, The Dark Knight has.
Yeah, has the big ferry showdown at the end.
Scene. Yeah, ferry. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. There's a movie. Ferries, the beginning of Trainwreck, which is not a great movie. I don't know if you ever saw Trainwreck.
I did. I don't remember any ferry action.
So she like wakes up. She obviously had a drunken night and a one night stand, and she wakes up in some dude's bed and then realizes that she has drunkenly come all the way to Staten Island. And she
yes, this does ring a bell.
With a hangover, she has to take the ferry back to the rest of the city. There's also a movie that a tiny movie that no one has ever heard of from 2007 that I liked a lot called Liberty Kid.
Yeah, I've not heard of this.
Yeah, it played the Los Angeles Film Festival in 2007. So it's one of those LA Film Festival movies that you never hear of again. But this was, I remember liking this movie a lot. It was basically, it's about two kids who work on Liberty Island, like on the, where the Statue of Liberty is. Okay. And they take the ferry to and from work every day. But then very early on in the movie, 9/11 happens and the ferry and the Statue of Liberty gets shut down to tourism indefinitely. Mm. And they sort of lose their livelihoods and their prospects. And it's like it's a tragic movie about 9/11 that's not tragic in the ways that you would assume.
Sure, yeah.
Movies, but I remember thinking it's a good movie. Yeah.
Right on.
Okay. Do you have any more?
That's it.
Okay. Well, speaking of trolleys, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the greatest movie ever made about public transit. Don't feel bad that you forgot it. I forgot it too. I'm so lucky that I mentioned this to Tyler when I saw him this past weekend, because he mentioned Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a movie that is actually about public transit or about the force,
the entire system
of public transit in Los Angeles. I mean, it's such a great companion piece to Chinatown, because they both tell fictionalized versions of things that actually did happen.
Yeah,
didn't happen exactly the way they happened in the movie, but I already gave enough Los Angeles history on this podcast. Look up the real stories of Chinatown or Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I like the phrasing of that. It didn't happen exactly the way it happened in the movie. Oh, you mean there wasn't cartoons involved?
Well, I was including Chinatown as well.
No, I know. It made more that phrasing made more sense for Chinatown.
Yeah.
It was just funny to lump that in with Jessica Rabbit slinking around.
But yeah, it was speaking of LA Film Festival, one year they would do like fun, like satellite screenings back when it still existed sometimes. And they showed on a DCP, they showed Who Framed Roger Rabbit at Union Station. And that was
very cool.
And saw it there. It's the only time I've been in that like event space, which you can, I don't know, if you walk in the doors from the street and look to your left, there's a big empty room, and that's where they have like fundraisers and events and stuff. And only time I was ever in there was for the screening.
Is that where they had the Oscars?
I'm guessing yes, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. We did it.
That's public transit.
Yep. We're big public transit fans. I mean, I am especially.
Yeah, I support it. I don't write it very often, but I support it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your most recent job was you were able to walk to.
That's true.
That's the real dream.
Yeah, I beat all forms of transit.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can find the podcast at Battleship Attention. You could probably find reviews of something that we would. I think I reviewed Patterson. So you could
probably review
Patterson. I can't remember if I reviewed her or not. But you can find those there. I definitely reviewed the Blu-ray of Fox and His Friends. So I'm just looking at my list and trying to see what I reviewed. All right. So you can find reviews there. You can follow me on Twitter, X and Blue Sky at David Pretension, Letterboxd David Backs. Check out the Patreon. Check out my other podcast. It's called The One Where I Met Your Mother. My wife and I watched an episode of Friends and an episode of How I Met Your Mother. We have a ton of fun. Scott, where can people find you?
On Twitter and Blue Sky, Rail of Tomorrow, and on Letterboxd, just as Scott and I.
Okay. Other than that, thank you for listening.
Hey, we'll get you next time.
Bye.